So having looked at the different advantages of a completely managed contract, let us also look at some of the shortcomings of a TOS contract. So a cultural misfit between the client and the vendor organization can often result into major communication gaps, lack of appreciation of the customer pain points and priorities, and a good gestation period is essential to stabilize the interface. So two or three major points here. One is a cultural mismatch, right? But when a vendor is selected, and we'll look at the criteria before selecting a vendor, but then culture happens to be one of the major concerns when we talk about a total outsourcing contract. Because understand one thing, when we have a complete outsourcing, that means you are outsourcing the entire process, the entire end-to-end chain to the third party, right? So in this case, there has to be a good synergistic fit between the two companies. Again, the vendor who is getting awarded the contract, he should look at the customer pain areas and architect the solution accordingly. He should not be too stringent about what their internal processes are, but then have a look at what the customer needs are and then architect solution accordingly. The second major case is in case of a multi-vendor scenario where one vendor manages the application, the other manages the infrastructure, then there is bound to be finger pointing and a blame game. So this is not really beneficial for the end customer. So that is the reason why a complete outsourcing contract is in place. But then if, say, the two different aspects are kept together, say the network infra is with vendor A and the application development is with vendor B, then there will always be finger pointing between the application owner and the infrastructure owner, right? So these things have to be taken care when a completely outsourcing contract is awarded. The third is when the transfer of contract happens from an existing vendor to a new vendor. So it could be because of any reason, right? So if the SLAs are getting breached regularly, or if the vendor is not able to provide the required level of support or the required level of technical expertise, then the customer might want to remove that vendor and get a new vendor in place. So there is a lot of friction when this kind of contract shifting happens between vendor 1 and vendor 2, because vendor 1 was they had a different mindset to handle the different processes. So the entire information exchange, the knowledge transfer, you know, this becomes a real challenge when we talk about the vendors getting changed. So selecting a outsourced model, so deciding which type of outsourcing model suits the company's needs, you have to look at few of the points below. So one is you look at some of the strategic priorities. So how much processes or strategies are you involved, are you willing to control and augment in case and augment for your business objectives. So that is your strategic priority. So understand which are your core priorities that you need to keep in-house, and then make a outsourcing decision. Second is the risk tolerance. What happens, what type of vendor client relationship are you comfortable with? So what is the level of outsourcing and what is the level of risk that you are ready to take? So suppose if you've done a completely managed service contract, and if the vendor is not able to fulfill the terms of that agreement, then it's again a double-edged sword, right? So analyze what your strategic priorities are, analyze what is the risk appetite when you want to award a contract like this. The advantage of picking up one over the other model is based on the assessment of these two factors, and basis your company needs and the value that each of the model gives you. So it's not just a cost factor, but then a factor of the efficiency, the efficacy, the competency, the maturity, and the technical know-how that the vendor brings. So it's a function of all of them. The company adopting any particular outsourcing strategy should also consider that when they free up these operations, they now no longer have to perform this operation, and it frees up a lot of resources within the company to do higher level tasks. Now, as I said, because when you engage in an outsourcing contract, you can free up your internal resources so that they can probably take up some additional or transformational requirements. and you leave the business as usual, so it's BAU activities to the vendor. So the goal of outsourcing is to improve the profitability of companies. As such, decisions should be based on analysis of a company's cost structures, strategic priorities, risk tolerance, and the available outsourcing models. Decisions should be taken on what to retain in-house and what to be outsourced. So again, this is the strategic priorities and the company's focus. It is easier to begin with staff augmentation because, as I said, it's at the lowest level, and then work your way towards some of the higher strategies. So it could be, say, build, operate and transfer, or a completely managed outsourcing. The relationship with the vendor is of paramount importance when we talk about IT outsourcing. So again, the GE example is that of, you know, we could easily relate to, or probably the TCS and the Government of India example that I gave for the passport application. The more meaningful relation that the vendor has with the organization, the better value the vendor can provide to the company. And then it becomes no longer as a vendor, but then the vendor also moves up the value chain and it becomes a strategic partner to the company. So strategic are not static and which will change over time as the company grows, and the dynamics of choosing different models will continue. So as in when the company innovates, or as in when the company moves or grows up the value chain, the strategies about outsourcing would also change. Having looked at the different operational models, now let us look at what are the strategies that go into picture when we decide a right outsourcing partner. So the first important decision making criteria should be that of reliability. How experienced is this company? How long are they in this line of business? What is their track record like? So reliability is the key to any business relationship. Ensure that the company has the right set of credentials when we talk about a company reliability. The second is the expertise. So once you know that the company has the relevant amount of credentials in the market, so they are there in the market since a long time, but then do they have the necessary expertise? So say a company might be there in the market since say 5 years, 10 years, but then do they have some relevant experience around say cryptography or blockchain, if that is what the company is trying to develop. So having the right sort of expertise is as equally or if not more important than having a reliable vendor in place. Does the company have the technical knowledge and expertise to provide the level of service that you want? You can get a feel for this by talking to the providers and discussing your project. So have a sense about what the kind of bench strength that they have, what are the kind of resources that they have. If possible, you can discuss your project and, you know, probably speak to a couple of people and get an understanding about what is their level of understanding of the skill set that you want. The next thing talks about the experience. So what kind of experience or what kind of similar projects that they have executed in the past? What were the results? In how many times have they succeeded? It's also important to know the failure rate, because all companies will not be 100% successful in the first go, right? So it's important for organization to realize this and also understand what were the failures, what are the mistakes, what are the past results. The experience of the company should be in line with what you require. So suppose if a company has delivered a solution around banking and this is kind of a functionality that you would want to outsource, then ensure that the company has the relevant experience with them. Lastly, it also talks about references. So, and this is a key criteria, because all vendors would generally talk good about themselves, but then it is always important to have a cross reference. So do a previous, so what do previous clients have to talk about the services of that particular vendor? Are they really happy with the kind of services that the vendor has given them? How many times the SLAs have been breached? Has the vendor been mature enough to understand this shortcoming in their people or in their SLAs or in their process? And how many times have they made a corrective action to ensure that the business runs smooth? So are they still using the same company? What was the reason for them? to use the same company in spite of the several SLA breaches, or have they changed to a new company? So these are some of the reference points or some of the discussion that could be taken up with the references. Proven references are always a good indicator whether a company is doing good or not. The last important point to consider is the communication. So a clear communication dialogue is important to maintain a smooth relation and ensure that the services are carried out in line with what your requirements are. You need to be able to contact your provider with ease and receive the prompt response to the correspondence. Being in a different country would not be a problem, but then the provider should be able to communicate in the language that you know and available during your office hours. Now, just imagine a company, say for example, if there is someone who is based in Hong Kong who wants to do this development work, or someone who is based in China, language becomes a largest barrier. And this is a real life scenario that I'm talking about. So any German car maker, so say someone like a Skoda, right? So when they had to do their development, they ensured that there were a lot of German speaking people on the project so that they could, you know, better relate to what the client was speaking, develop the codes and the functionality as they wanted, but then ensure that, you know, there is no communication gap as such. So this is also very important when you select the right vendor. So a couple of background verifications, know what the company is doing, for how long it has been in this market, get a reference check from the clients, get a grip on what the technical level of expertise are, know what is their expertise in handling the particular project that you are looking at. So these are some of the key areas that should be looked at before selecting a partner. Now, having looked at how the partner selection should happen, let us finally discuss what are the commercial models involved when we talk about outsourcing contracts. So there are two traditional time-proven commercial models of outsourcing. In the past 5 to 10 years, many new commercial models have been tried out and they are evolving as we speak today. And at the same time, the traditional pricing models are here to stay. And as I said, they are evolving. So it is a fact that no model is contracted across the board. So different companies would have different pricing models in place. So let us look at them. So the first is time and material. Now this is the oldest and the most common commercial model. This is absolutely a no risk model, both for the customer as well as for the vendor, where the vendor assigns resources to the project or the customer side. So it is as simple as saying that, you know, I am giving you certain resources and that's about it, right? The customer is free to utilize the resources as they want, and as they would do with their own staff, right? But obviously certain labor laws will have to be adhered to. So they cannot, you know, make them work as if they were slaves, right? So ensure that the labor laws and everything is in place. But then, as I said, this is the most basic form of the commercial model. So you provide resources and the organization uses them. So as and when the company's demand ceases, the resources are released. So typically with a notice, so the notice of 2 weeks is not exactly correct, but then it depends upon what is the contract that you've signed with the vendor. So it could be 2 weeks, it could be 1 month, right? Because understand one thing, so if there are resources who are working on that particular project, and if they're just suddenly asked to leave, that means it's a big loss to the company as well, right? So say if TCS is providing resources to another enterprise, say Volkswagen, right, to handle their IT network and IT development things. Now all of a sudden Volkswagen says that, no, I don't need 5 resources now. So TCS will not just stop them, because even these 5 resources have to be brought back to the company. The TCS cannot just disown them, right? So there has to be a proper contract period. The biggest advantage to the customer is to retain control of the project as always, have additional resources as and when needed, because as I said, it is easy for the company to show it on their balance sheet that they have only a less number of people. and no commitment to retain the resource beyond the need. So they would have a contract in place and an exit clause as well, right? So as long as they need the resources, they will have them with the contract which is in place, and whenever they feel that resources are not needed, they will just exit the contract. So in case of the time and material, the vendor is assured of the annuity revenue over a period of time, so till the time you have the contract in place, and gain sufficient confidence of the customer to manage the project and transfer it to a managed service model. So this is the key, right? So everyone wants to move up to the value chain. Even the partner who is today providing resources, they would want to get a greater share in the business. So the first or the basic step is to provide resources, then probably try and get a project themselves, then slowly get on to a completely managed contract. However, it's favored for the on-site engagements. The customer is apprehensive of the offshore T&M, as they don't have visibility into the activities, and hence they suspect that it's a low productivity. So that's generally not the case right now, because you have a lot of productivity measuring tools in place so as to avoid this right now. But then there is a very important flip side to it. Now what happens is, many times when resources are given to organizations to serve their purpose, and it could be for a limited time, slowly what happens is the employees that are or the resources that are given, they get so engaged with the company would generally absorb them on their payrolls, right? So this is also one of the things that happens in the industry. So if you've given an on-site engineer, very often than not you will see that after say 2 years, 3 years, if the company sees a lot of value in those resources, they will directly absorb them in their payroll. So this is again a threat for the companies who provide the resources as well, right? So ensure that they rotate the resources and stuff like that. The next pricing model that we'll talk about is the fixed pricing model. So it is best suited when for a project or a group of projects, and it could be for development or maintenance, and generally it has an accuracy of plus or minus 10% to 10%. So that's the case every time, right? So in this case, a vendor generally gives a fixed pricing contract basis the effort estimation that was done, and the vendor would generally take a hit if the project exceeds the budget, right? So if the vendor has done a forecasting saying that this to develop this particular functionality he needs 5 resources for say 1 year's time, correct? And suppose because of any reason those 5 resources were not able to complete the work within the stipulated time, so the vendor has to take that hit. And more often than not, there are penalty clauses also attached. So when the organization signs a outsourcing contract, say if it's development of a particular functionality, then they would say it's a time bound activity. They would want the results to be delivered within 1 week. And if that's a part of your contract beyond which the vendor is supposed to get penalized, that means the vendor has to do this budgeting and forecasting estimation of the efforts very accurately, or else it is bound to face these penalties. The fixed price not to exceed is a corollary of the fixed pricing model, where the price fixed is agreed upon and the billing is on actual as approved by the customer. Having looked at these two models, there are newer commercial models also in place. So things like the gain sharing pricing model, so it's kind of a profit sharing pricing model, but generally depending upon what the relationship between the vendor and the organization is, these type of pricing models are developed. Incentive based pricing, so say if it's a company which is into sales and he's hired some resources who are from a third party, right? Now it could be an incentive based pricing, saying that if these particular sales guys are able to sell certain X amount of units, then they will get certain pricing. So these kind of innovative models are coming into picture. Shared risk reward pricing is a new way of pricing the outsourcing contract. So in this not just the profit, but then the vendor is also liable to share the risk in case of a breach, or in case if the business is not working properly. So it's a higher level of engagement between the vendor and the organization. So having looked at the different pricing models, let us look at some of the trends that we see in the outsourcing industry now. So some of the key questions that drive IT outsourcing trends are: how will technology change the future of IT outsourcing? So with, you know, newer ways in which work is getting done, will it really change? So I give you an example of how the BPOs are getting shifted from India to Philippines. Now that is because of a changing business dynamics. There are, you are finding a lot of low cost skilled people in Philippines, low cost IT infrastructure in Philippines, and that is the reason why things are moving from India to Philippines. What is the nature of supplier customer relationship? That's the key that we discussed. Which IT outsourcing trends will prove to be the biggest game changer? So companies will have to analyze that. Are, say, vested outsourcing really in the making, or you're looking at profit sharing models? So which are the new trends that are emerging? One of the main reasons is the acute and growing shortage of IT skills. As I said, particularly in the US, talent shortage is now a growing problem, and that is the reason why they engage into a lot of outsourcing contracts. But then, believe me, countries like Singapore, now what is really happening is nowadays, earlier Singapore, a country like Singapore had a lot of people from India, and they used to welcome people from India to work on their particular projects. So Singapore again is a hub for financial trading and the BFSI sector as such. So earlier there used to be a lot of people from India going to Singapore, and a lot of people had their permanent residency in Singapore. But now slowly what the government is doing is that they are actually promoting the local people to take up these jobs. Now what they've done is, over the years they've developed their education system, they've developed the entire ecosystem of the companies so strong that now the government mandates them that they should at least have, say, 80% of the people who are from the local community, and only 10 or 20% could be hired from outside. So this is again the way in which the IT shortage is being handled by countries like Singapore. As per a Gartner report, it says it predicts that by 2020 there will be close to 1.4 million computer specialist job openings. Now again, this is an area to look at, right? So if you're planning a career, so just think through it. It will create a talent shortage that universities won't be able to fill even by even 30%. So even McKinsey predicts that there is a strongest growth in the demand will be from the basic digital skills and the advanced technology skills. So again, with IoT, machine learning, blockchain, augmented reality, digital twins, these things coming in, so there is a lot of scope for skilled labor or technical skills, as we call it. So some of the trends that are seen in 2019 is less focus on driving cost reduction, but then more focus on getting the desired efficiencies and the desired technical expertise in place to develop a better product. Shift away from a single IT outsourcing provider to having multiple outsourcing vendors. Rise of alternative IT outsourcing destinations, so not just India, but then develop Philippines and other areas as well. And some of the trends in outsourcing that we see is intelligent automation of mutual processes, new contract models, as I mentioned, hybrid offshoring. So what this means is having a right mix of the outsourcing and the offshoring model. So this is called as hybrid offshoring. Having a service integration, greater trust and transparency with the vendor, and challenges with the governance. Now governance obviously has to have a greater issue when we talk about offshoring or outsourcing. So having a governance model in place is of key, and that's where big consultants like McKinsey, so they had a report, and probably if you are interested you should Google it. So it says governance in IT outsourcing. So it's a white paper by them. So probably just have a look. So it talks about the future trends of outsourcing and how governance plays a key role in outsourcing contracts. So with this, I bring this end to this session on outsourcing. So I hope I've been able to do justice to this. So we talked about outsourcing at a high level. We differentiated what the crux is between an outsourced contract versus an offshore contract is. We discussed what are the intricacies in an outsourcing contract. We discussed the different operational models. We then had a look at the different criterias when we choose an offshore or outsourcing outsourcing vendor. We had a look at the different pricing models, and we also had a look at the different emerging trends in IT outsourcing. So I hope I've done justice to this topic. This was interesting to you, and I'd like to thank you for viewing.